Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to ScaryCast. This is Dr. John, and we've got a great show online for you tonight. Devin Tate, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great. I'm just trying to keep warm here. We got a cold spell out in Hollywood, California.
Oh, I know what you mean. Tell us a little bit about what's going on there. I need about 1 minute to get our guest Mark Sargent on here. So tell us what's going on out there.
Yeah, sure. So earlier tonight I was at the Wowie Awards. That's a new award show from the World of Wonder production company. They are the people who brought you RuPaul's Drag Race, and they also have made films such as The Eyes of Tammy Faye. And they did Party Monster, the original documentary about Michael Alec and James St. James. So James St. James was actually there this evening. I got to say hi to him. And there were a couple of girls from RuPaul's Drag Race. Mayhem Miller was there. She was scheduled to perform tonight. And Morgan McMichaels was there. So I was actually working on the red carpet doing some camera work for my pal Marky Makeup. So he's going to be putting some of his interview clips from the red carpet, or rather the pink carpet from the Wowie Awards, up on his website later this week.
Well, that sounds great. How is Marky Makeup doing? We had him on here just a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, he's doing great, keeping really busy. There's a lot of holiday parties going on, so he gets booked up a lot, you know, to do the body painting and airbrush painting and stuff like that. So I know he's really busy. I'm pretty busy. I got my Jollywood event coming up on Saturday, a couple of days from now. So if anybody is in the Southern California region, come to Hollywood. It's right by the corner of Hollywood and Vine at East Town. There is free parking, which is an anomaly in Hollywood. You hardly ever get free parking, so come on down to Jollywood on Saturday from 5 to 9 p.m. at East Town and get free parking. We've got live entertainment, carolers. We got Santa Claus riding in on a fire truck from LAFD. And there's going to be arts and crafts vendors. You can do all your holiday shopping in one place. We got food and a wassail garden, so you can drink some wassail while you're listening to our musicians perform.
Well, that sounds just great. That's what I want to do. And free parking in Hollywood. I know that's just a crazy thing. But anyway, that's really cool. Now, we've got a good friend of yours coming on in a couple of weeks. Kristen, tell us a little bit about her.
Yeah, I'm really excited to have Kristen on. She's going to be with us on December 27th, 28th, I guess, your time. I knew her back in the day as the lead singer of a band called Demonica and the Darklings, but she is actually a hypnotherapist, Reiki master. She does readings, tarot readings, and that sort of thing. She did one for me at a Halloween party once and really blew me away. So really excited to talk about her, about rebirth and reincarnation. She actually died in a fire and came back to life. So she's somewhat of an expert now on reincarnation and rebirth.
Wow. I have heard stories like that about a number of had near-death experiences, and they have come back, and they've been able to do readings for people. I think that's just phenomenal. And speaking of great psychics, next week, we've got my good friend Jenna Grover. She is one of the She Squatchers. She is an incredibly talented psychic, and she will be with us. So we're looking forward to that. All right, Mark Sargent, flat earth proponent. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're doing great.
Great.
We are glad to have you here, Mark. This is Devin Tate from West Hollywood, and I'm here. Mark Sargent is a flat earth proponent. We were very fortunate to have you. I found you when I was looking at the program for Flat Earth 2018, and you were one of the speakers, and I have looked at some of your podcasts, we're not podcasts, but some of your YouTube broadcasts, and they are very, very encouraging. First of all, you're from out there in the Colorado area, and
I was in Colorado, but currently I am up in the Northwest near Seattle, Washington.
Oh, okay. So it's probably
that's
not
right.
As
that's
cold
right. No worries.
Up there as it would be in Colorado. Well, that's great. So tell us a little bit about how you got involved in the flat Earth concept and became one of its major proponents. I think that would be a neat way for us to start our interview here.
Sure. I didn't believe in conspiracies. I didn't believe anyone even lied. All the way up until I got to university, I was raised on a rural island up in northwest of Seattle called Whidbey, Whidbey. And honestly, didn't even think the conspiracies existed. I'm a little bit older, so it took me a while. And saw JFK in the theater, you know, when it came out in the early 90s, and all of a sudden thought, oh, wow, so people in positions of power do lie. And, you know, started down the generic rabbit trail of different little conspiracies to where some years later, when I was out in Colorado playing video games for a living, I got conspiracy bored. I pretty much had an opinion on just about every conspiracy you could possibly think of. And there was one that, of course, everybody in the conspiracy world hates more than anything, and that is Flat Earth, because we all know it's stupid, it's ridiculous. Why would you ever look at that? I mean, I know people that will tell you straight to your face that the entire royal family is made out of lizards, and yet when you bring up Flat Earth, they'll just laugh you out of the room.
I hate to interrupt you, but isn't the entire royal family, aren't they really lizards?
Well, that's just it. The point is that that people will believe in all sorts of things, but Flat Earth is universally, no play on words there, accepted as the worst conspiracy out there, where nobody, well, up until very, very recently, nobody would touch it with a 10-foot pole. And I got into it, you know, it's the last book on the shelf you're never going to read. It's the DVD for Christmas that you're never going to watch, that sort of thing. And so in 2014, it's true. If you like Flat Earth, you know, in the first time you see it, there's probably something wrong with you. The T-shirt that usually reads, I became a flat earther because I tried to debunk it. And that was true with me as well. I remember getting actually blushed when I clicked on my first flat earth video that was on YouTube. And there was not a lot out there in 2014. It was about this German guy who was saying that, yeah, the flight routes in the Southern Hemisphere don't make any sense. He goes, their connections, 99% of them are double connections. They're going all over the place, and most of them are going north and then south. He goes, they do not make sense unless it's not a globe, unless it's this flat dinner plate thing that's covered with a dome. And I thought, okay, that's an interesting story, but I don't buy it, not for a long shot. I think I can, you know, I think I can dig into this a little more. And then I ran into a Canadian artist that said he was a contract artist for NASA that did backdrops for certain things, and he said that at the highest levels of NASA they know full well what it looks like. And so I go, okay, well, let me look into this a little bit more. And so I thought I could disprove it in a weekend, and that was one of the worst ideas I've ever had, to where 9 months later I'm sitting there banging my head on the keyboard in the beginning of 2015 saying, it cannot be flat. We cannot be living in a Truman Show. But indeed, that's what I came to the conclusion after, you know, I put a series of videos out to the internet hive mind, and said, okay, tell me where I went wrong here. Tell me how it's not flat, because if we were treating it like a court case, I couldn't prove the globe in a court of law anymore. I couldn't. Could I prove the flat Earth? Absolutely, without a shadow of, you know, with no uncertainty. No, but I could create so much reasonable doubt in the globe that the only place you have left to go is the flat Earth. So I made a series of videos called Flat Earth Clues and put them out February of 2015. And almost immediately, I mean, within just a few weeks, people started calling me saying, hey, tell me more. This seems really, really interesting. I go, okay. So I, you know, started making a few more things. And then all of a sudden I was offered a podcast, and a publisher out of London said, hey, we'd like you to turn your clues into a book. And then all of a sudden things just got bigger and bigger and bigger, to where now we have hundreds of regional meetups and conferences in different parts of the world. And it's just gotten massive, right? I mean, I don't even know. And my stuff was mirrored so much because I made a Creative Commons license. I didn't even monetize it for the first 6 months. That I don't even know how many millions of hits I've given away. But that's where I am now. I do this full time. And in fact, we just finished a full blown documentary that was released in the middle of November, called Behind the Curve, which did surprisingly well through the film festivals. It did 21 festivals in 7 countries. We were in Moscow last week. It was just wild. And so, that's where we are. So real quick, the short version for people who are listening, probably going, there's no way this guy's serious. You're not living on this tiny little rock flying through an impossible universe at 5 different velocities and directions. You're living in a planetarium, a terrarium, a building with 4 walls and a ceiling and a floor, a Hollywood backlot. It might as well be the Truman Show, only much, much bigger. There you go. There's my summary.
Okay. And, you know, I will say that I've done some research on the flat Earth. And here is what I found. This is something that I believe a lot of people don't know, because I'm a former college professor. When I see a concept that I like flat Earth, and in fact, I didn't screw my nose up and say, well, this can't be true, because I have a very wide notion of what really could be true. I mean, I'm, you know, Mark, just so that you know, and Devin, you might not have heard this, but on my other podcast, it used to be called Comic-Con Stars, I'm a firm believer that Anna Nicole Smith is still alive, lives in North Myrtle Beach, and that a body double of her and a body double of her son were killed, because there is enough evidence that something very strange went on there. People look at me and laugh, but nobody can disprove this, because Anna Nicole used to stay with a real estate developer up in North Myrtle Beach, you know, about a year or two before she died. There's a lot of strangeness about the fact of how much money the Danny Lynn has, and all that. So there's just a lot of strangeness there. So Mark, I don't really disbelieve anything. I like to explore these things, and that's why we have Scarycast.
Right.
What I found out is that apparently Aristotle and the great mathematician Eratosthenes, they both just for some reason believed the Earth was spherical. Eratosthenes even did his magnificent experiment where he gave a reasonable estimation of the size of a spherical Earth. And that's all well and good. And then here we come along, and one of the major bodies that controls the news and controls what we do in the world, or at least in the Western world at that point, was the Catholic Church. And they believed in a geocentric world, and Galileo, geocentric meaning, I'm sorry, a geocentric universe, whereas the whole the whole universe revolves around the Earth. And then here came Galileo, who saw Jupiter's 4 moons and was tortured, was imprisoned by the Catholic Church, and what they wanted is they wanted to continue their Earth or their geocentric philosophy, so they then converted many of the arguments in the Bible, especially when we talk about the four corners of the Earth. They then began teaching the flat Earth in opposition to what Galileo spoke up. So that's where it started. Then came the period of time where we began to believe in a heliocentric universe, or at least a heliocentric solar system, and therefore we got away from the flat Earth notion. And apparently in the mid-1800s, a group of religious folks in different sects started re-literalizing the Bible, and the new flat earth movement was born, very tiny, but was born in the mid-1800s. And then somewhere around 1950, the flat earth group got a real boost, and it has been escalating like mad ever since. Now, is that kind of the story or kind of the thumbnail history that you know? Because I mean, you're our expert tonight.
More or less. The only things that really haven't been included is how the governments of the world kind of figured this out and buried it as best they could, which was, and because a lot, some people are saying, well, are you saying, you know, that this world, if it is a Truman Show, if it is a Hollywood backlot, was it made by man? It's like, no, not even close. In fact, our best and brightest, this thing was so well designed that even our best explorers and our best scientists did not figure it out until almost 1960. And that makes sense, too, because if you didn't have the appropriate technology to detect this, then what do you got? Let's say you're the king of France in 1400, right? And you've got an old map of what the world really looks like. Even a three-dimensional map. What good is it going to do you? Because remember, back then, up until 1900, you mean all you had were ships. You know, in fact, earlier you had wooden ships and you had horses. That does you no good until the internal combustion engine is created in the early 1900s, and really until you have early aircraft, you don't know anything. And so that's where the United States government kind of took over. They flew Admiral Byrd to the North Pole in 1926, and then whatever he found up there spooked him, because immediately flew him down to the South Pole, and that's where he spent the rest of his years, from 1928 all the way up until his death in 1957, just flying better and better planes around the Antarctic trying to find the walls of this place. Because it's not like, because people say, well, you know, you're saying that Antarctica is the end of the world. I'm going, well, not the coastline of Antarctica. You'd still have to go in thousands of miles. And when he found it during Operation Deep Freeze in 1955, 1956, well, then the powers that be needed to make a decision, which was, do you let the public in on it that the world isn't a globe, back in the late 1950s, maybe in almost 1960? And they couldn't do it. In fact, one out of probably every 10 people I talk to, they say, why would they hide it? Why would you bother hiding this thing? I'm going, because it messes with the entire infrastructure. You're talking about people that would, I mean, not just academically, but economically, but spiritually. There's all sorts of reasons you would not want to do this. But the biggest is it would shift the balance of power back to the churches. And science would take a big blow to the gut. They would have to admit that they were wrong about a very key piece of information, and that would put into question everything else. So, sorry, the short version of that is that the key here is that we knew about it, but we didn't know about it until about 1960. And then when it was discovered, they just said, yeah, let's just keep a lid on this until we can figure out a way to roll it out to the public that won't get them in such a frenzy that they'll run around the streets with pitchforks and torches, that sort of thing.
Well, I think on the other hand, it's a control philosophy. Think of UFOs for a minute. And Devin, you and I have had the UFO. We've had many UFO talk. And Devin, you respond to me along with Mark. If the government publicly acknowledged on the front page of the New York Times that UFOs are real, and first of all, you would have panic in the streets. And whatever order that we have today, would go away, because people would be frightened. They'd say, oh, well, you're the government, but you don't control what the UFOs can do. And it's a control thing more than it is anything else, I believe, because there would be sheer panic. If you had the idea that your government could not control what is going on, could not save you if there was a problem, there would be total anarchy. And I think the view that I've just stated is it's very close to what you said, just in some different words. Devin, what do you think about that? Because you're out there in Hollywood, people believe a lot of things, and I don't fault them for what they believe. In fact, we had a friend of yours on here who talked about the UFO connection up in Rachel, Nevada. I mean, what do you think about the two views that Mark and I have just expressed about why the government wants to keep this under wraps? What is your opinion on that?
Well, I'm not a big conspiracy theorist, so this one I have a little more trouble with than some other ideas. But it's interesting, and I like to hear Mark's point of view. I'm curious how other people have reacted to him, what type of reactions he's gotten from people.
And okay. By the way, your opening statements, it's pretty much what I had hoped for. Because, yeah, you can hear a lot of different things about a lot of different topics and conspiracies. But Flat Earth, it is burned into our brains when we are 6 years old. We are shown the globe in the classroom when we were, in first grade or kindergarten, and it stays with you. The globe is always in the classroom. And if you make it through, high school, that's 12 years. And if you go through, your bachelor's and your master's and your PhD, well, then you're probably doomed. Most people are doomed anyway. But people react in a very, it is very polarizing, extremely polarizing. It is not one of those topics to where people are on the fence about. Meaning, I've run into very, very few people that have said, flat Earth, who cares, right? You're either in or you're not in, which is fine. And I have almost found no one that has ever said, at all the emails and all the phone calls and all the texts where they say, flat Earth, never heard of it. Everybody's heard of it, which is also a good sign. But it's kind of like family, and 90% of our members are in the closet about it because, family, friends, and coworkers. They might get ostracized. I can't tell you the amount of emails that says, oh, yeah, I totally been to Flat Earth, but there's no way I'm going to make a YouTube channel about it. There's no way you can use my real name on the show or the podcast that I do. Because it gets pretty dicey. Again, your natural knee-jerk reaction is to go straight against it. It usually starts, and kind of like telling somebody when they're, over 30 years old that they were adopted. Because it makes, those ripples back in time. Because as long as you don't believe it, I can tell you, yeah, you were adopted. I'll do that over and over. And you'll be like, yeah, whatever, shut up. And then all of a sudden, the second you start believing it, you start revisiting every conversation you ever had with your parents since you were old enough to remember anything. It's that sort of shockwaves where people go through, the five stages of acceptance and all that. So, yeah, people do brace against it, absolutely. And I braced against it too. I mean, look, I've seen people flip in less than an hour. Most of them don't. Most of them take about 2 weeks. But it took me months because I'm extremely stubborn when it comes to that stuff. And yeah, so there you go. But reactions are usually not necessarily hostile, but people will come at me where they'll say, okay, and usually like the documentary screenings I've gone to, when people have their hands up, I know how it's going to go. They'll say, what about this, fill in the blank here, or can you explain this, also fill in the blank here. Take your pick, just about everything you could think of regarding the world, plate tectonics, time zones, how the sun works, how the moon works, what about stars, what about comets, what about meteors, are you saying everything in NASA is a lie? It just goes on and on and on and on. What about all the countries? It's talking about millions of people that it would take to cover this up and so on and so on and so on. It's you run through this endless series of questions, and then if you can make it on the other side, well, then you have a choice to make. And then it's, I'm still not buying it, and you go on your merry way. Or you do kind of buy into it, but it's strange that let me end this part with this, which is we have like a 99% retention rate. Which means that remember how I said I can produce so much reasonable doubt in the globe that you have no choice but to go to some sort of version of the flat Earth. It may not, you may not agree with different flat Earth models, but you're never going back to the globe because there's nothing there to go back to. We've just shot it full of holes. So there you go.
Okay. I mean that makes sense. In terms of alternative philosophies and realities, I will speak a moment to the scientific community, of which I used to be a part of. And by the way, mm-hmm. I'm the guy with the PhD and three masters, so hopefully you'll realize I'm not beyond hope here. I know that
well, obviously, if you're talking to me, I can't even get a person with a master's degree to even talk to our groups most of the time because they just think, it's absolutely beneath us.
Well, let me share with you what the scientific community did to me, and this is a true story. The names, the dates, and the institutions are redacted, but we were going to have a celebration of knowledge. And when I was doing my doctorate at North Carolina State University, I was also a research associate at the Ryan Institute of Parapsychology in Durham because I was just in Raleigh. It was only 45 minutes away. I had visited there in the mid-1990s. I met two wonderful gentlemen, Dr. Richard Broughton, and Dr. John Palmer, who were very, very much scientists. They both had PhDs in parapsychology. I believe they were in parapsychology. If not, they were at least in psychology from the University of Edinburgh, which is the world leader, and they offer accredited PhDs and masters in parapsychology. When I was there at the Ryan Research Institute, I was introduced to the Zener cards. That's the deck of 25, I believe it's 25 cards, and there's the circle, the plus, the wavy lines, the square, and
the mind reading
and,
cards, yeah.
Exactly, and they're a lot of fun. I mean, they're a lot of fun, and I think I was at that point, I had just finished a master's in agriculture and natural resources systems management, which was really ag econ, which was really statistics. I loved statistics, and I felt that students did not understand statistics. They didn't understand why it was important to them. And I'm not talking about the ones getting degrees in it. I'm talking about the rest of the people getting college degrees, I believe, need to understand statistics because that's how you can look at something beyond a reasonable doubt or not. Okay, you can't prove anything with statistics, but you can get the old beyond a reasonable doubt out of statistics.
Right.
So what I was going to do is I had invited Dr. Sally Rheinfeather, who's a very good friend. I love that lady to death. Her father was J.B. Rhein, who introduced the term extrasensory perception to us. So I was going to get mm-hmm. her to come and talk about her work at the Rhein Research Institute, and prior – going to get a group of students up there. We were going to do a Zener card experiment. We were going to have one person sending, and then we were going to have maybe 8 or 10 students receiving and writing down the results of what they would receive to mark what did they think the card was. That basically we would shuffle the card deck, the receiver would stand there, look at a card, think about it, put it down, and continue. And then what we were going to do is we were going to take the results. I had written a quick little program that we could enter the results into the computer, and we could find out if anybody among the student group, the 8 or 10 students who were taking place in this experiment, which was going to be done in front of hundreds of people, maybe a little bit of pressure there, but it was going to be a scientific experiment, and we were going to see if any of these students exhibited signs of being able to pick up what the card was. And I thought it was really neat. I mean, first of all, you can get lucky, and you can have a very
sure.
high score on one run. And I was going to talk about that. I was going to say, well, all right, you got, instead of the average, which would be 20% because there were five cards and five instances of them, suppose someone got 36% right. Well, that would be statistically significant, meaning that something other than chance had a 99% chance of going on. But then I would say, well, now, do you want to try it again? And let's see. And the whole point is it takes multiple runs of an experiment to really prove something. So what I would have done in a period of 45 minutes is I would have taught several important statistical concepts. And that would hopefully, because it's a pop culture topic, ESP and the Zener cards and the paranormal, hopefully that would have gotten students interested in statistics because they could see that there's fun involved. The real basis of this is a mathematical look at, is there really something there or not? So that's what I was going to do. Well, my boss, the chairman of my department, got me in his office, sat me down and said, John, I've been told by several professors in the College of Science that if you do that, you will not have a job here at the end of the semester. And I looked at him, and I started laughing. I said, you know what? This reminds me of the scene from South Park, the movie, when the boys from South Park accused Sheila Brozlovsky of being the queen of intolerance. And there's a great movie, Intolerance, from the early 1900s, and I think it was even remade. But the point is, the so-called scientific community, and I'll go head-to-head with any of you who remember what you said, and I'll lay you to waste right here on Scarycast. You won't be able to put me down because I'm correct and you're not. That is how science occurs. I mean, look at Galileo. We talked about him earlier. He was listed as a heretic. You know, he wanted to say that there was a planet called Jupiter that encircled the sun and had four moons that encircled Jupiter. Now, whether you like that or not, you know, you take a guy like that, and so what do you want to do? You get him and torture him. That's exactly how the world works. And that's exactly how the world worked at this so-called university that wanted where the faculty said, we will make sure you don't have a job. Now, that changed me forever. I said, well, I'm going to explore for the truth. I don't care what people say, but I will be as academically rigorous as possible, but I am not going to cast aside an idea that might be true just because it's not fashionable. And, Mark, I think maybe that is something the flat earth people need to start stressing is, if you don't like it, prove to me why you don't like it. Go to work. Don't sit there and don't be an armchair quarterback. Don't do that.
Yeah.
No good. That means you're lazy. I'll call you lazy to your face.
Right.
And so, I hope that helps. That's why I'm interested in you, because I think, I don't know if the Earth's flat or not, but you've got some interesting ideas that need to be explored.
Yeah. In fact, I try to tell people. I say at the end of all my – end of all my videos, I say, literally at the end of all the clues, I say, look, don't take my word for it. Don't listen to me. Do your own research and ask questions. Prove it for yourself, because I'm just a guy, I'm just a voice at the other end of whatever you're listening to. It could be, I am not going to be able to convince you in the time that you're listening to this show, but probably not. So you're going to have to convince yourself, like everybody else in the community did. Everybody else, what they just exhausted their own questions. And then only after that did they finally come to the realization, yeah, you know what? This isn't that crazy anymore. So.
Well, no,
yeah,
it's not.
Well,
go ahead, Dennis.
Well, I wanted to chime in here.
sure.
You know, at first, before I listened to you talk, you know, I think just the thought of somebody even being a proponent of a flat earth theory kind of made me angry, you know, to be honest. But in talking to you, listening to you, and thinking about the world that we live in right now, it's so hard to determine, to tell fact from fiction a lot. And I think some people have just been so conditioned to just believe what they hear. So whether they hear it, you know, whatever source they believe or they trust, they just take that as the gospel and they just believe that that's true. So I think it is actually really interesting and actually helpful that you're presenting another avenue for people to think about and really making people ask themselves questions like, you know, what do I believe? Who do I trust? How do I prove to myself something that I believe or that I don't believe is real. It's actually really
right.
thought-provoking.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is my one of my big goals, which is, you know, the whole do your own research and ask questions. Because if you can get your head around the whole flat Earth concept, you are now open to everything. Potentially, you'll revisit every weird idea you've ever had. That you'll have to dust off every old weird little thing that's out there on your shelves, because it's that big. Everything else, you know, there are some secrets that can be buried in the desert, but this thing is something you really can't run away from it. You either it's like a marble in a paint can. Once it's, you know, you can't shake it out. You've got to resolve it one way or the other. Either you're just going to say that, you know, you're going to ignore it, or it's like, okay, maybe I will, you know, look into this until I'm satisfied one way or the other. So, yeah, thanks for saying that, because, yeah, the reactions they are mixed. That's for sure.
I bet.
Well,
yeah.
Well, I mean, and here's another thing that I just came across. Earlier, about a year ago, I interviewed Daniel Allen Jones from the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And he has done a lot of research on the Aurora, Texas UFO crash.
1899,
and he did it with a gentleman who has passed away. But this morning, and I'll tell everybody what I do at 6 o'clock in the morning, I'm looking at documentaries on YouTube. Thank you, YouTube. Mm. And I saw a documentary that gentleman put together about all the rash of sightings of spaceships, or airships as they called them, back between 1897 and 1900, there were reports all over, and very, very strange reports, as I said, about ships, about terrestrial people like you and me, with the inhabitants of the ship. And there always seemed to be three of them. There's so many commonalities in those stories, and I find it wonderful. And I want to go down there and investigate it. I think it's important that you leave your mind open. If there are hundreds of reports in newspapers in 1897, there are hundreds of reports where we didn't really have, we had no television or radio, no way to interact between various cities except basically people visiting and telling what was going on, or someone riding a horse to them, because we didn't have cars back then. And so when you have so many commonalities, I think real scientists look at that and say, what is going on? There, you know, if you've got all these reports ranging from California all the way up to Texas and all the way up to what was then really the Midwest, Illinois, Indiana, well, now you need to look at that, and you really need to examine those reports. People were not insane back then. They reported what they saw. And let's look at that. That needs to be a very important part of scientific research. And I guess I would call it social science. And that's what I'm interested in now, because I want to see what people thought. And if there are so many stories, you got to look at them. Yes, sir.
If you're a big UFO fan, I haven't had a chance to bring this up in a few interviews anyway. Were you aware, because 1899, that's good, no question. And of course, all the mass sightings in the late 1800s to the early 1900s was fantastic. But did you ever look into the 1561 Nuremberg event? Dun, dun, dun.
No, I did not, and I'm not familiar.
Oh, you've got,
please,
if you're a UFO
please,
fan,
please
you have got. All you have to do is look it up, and I'll send you an email regarding it. There's actually a wiki entry for it. It's called the 1561 Nuremberg event, which is by far the most fascinating UFO sighting that's ever been talked about in any newspaper. It was a wonderful, it's a real short version, wonderful spring morning, April morning in Nuremberg, Germany. You know, people were out there having their, you know, Schnitzelgluben and toast or whatever they eat at breakfast in Germany. And, you know, Nuremberg was a big town back then. It was a big, big place. And two giant, what can only be described as space aircraft carriers, parked themselves over the city, started launching fighters at each other, and just started blasting the hell out of each other. And for like a solid hour, these two groups were going at it, and then finally, I mean, an hour is a long time, you know, when and remember, this is 1561, you know, they had newspapers, you know, hand cranked newspapers, but they didn't have any of the modern conveniences. And then after that solid hour, a third faction showed up, this single giant angular ship, black, all black, shows up, parks itself right in between them. The other two groups scatter, and then the black ship hangs out for a while and then finally takes off. And even Ancient Aliens covered this. They left out the black ship part, which I thought was interesting. But the newspaper, they were there. Everyone was there so long that their sketch artists came out, and you can there's archives. You can actually look up on Google it and Google the images, and you'll see the newspaper full color of what happened in the sky that morning. And it's just gorgeous. And it's glossed over to this day. You know, back then there was no science fiction, and so the only thing they could relate it to was religious. So it's like, oh, it must be a sign from God. You know, but at the same time, well, I don't know if God's using fighter planes and you know, various factions. And there were, again, three factions there, but it was a fantastic look at potential hierarchies of what this, you know, different civilizations and how they relate to this place. So check it out if you get a chance.
Well, definitely we will do that. And this gives me an opportunity to stop you and say, we've got a great topic for a show. And what I would do is I would invite Angelia Shear, who is my very good friend. She's the head of Tennessee MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network. Mark, in a month or two or three, I'd like to have you and Angelia on with Devin and I, and we'll talk about that. Because she will she's a tenacious researcher. And she was one of our featured guests at the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference this past October in Kingsport, Tennessee. She'll be coming back. She's a staple in my research-oriented look at the paranormal. So we'll...
Uh-oh, you broke up there for a second. And he's gone. Are you still there?
Oh, I'm here. Hopefully John will be able to join us again.
John sounded like he was turning into a transformer for a second. And
oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, John, are you back?
Move outside. Oh, yeah, I'm back.
Oh, okay.
Can you hear me now?
Okay. Yeah, okay, now we can hear you.
Anyway, we will invite you back along with Angelia Shear of Tennessee MUFON, and we'll talk about that. That's wonderful, and that along with the Aurora sighting are things that you don't hear a lot about. And so we'll discuss, and that'll be great. That'll be a great topic for us one evening.
Okay.
All right. Now, I've got another question that has been burning inside of me to ask you.
Okay.
A cousin of the flat earth is the hollow earth. You've heard a little bit about that, right?
I actually studied Hollow Earth before I got into Flat Earth. That was like one of the last conspiracies I dug into before I finally got into Flat Earth.
Well, I have met, thank goodness, Brooks Agnew, who is probably the top guy in the Hollow Earth. Brooks will be on with us 2 weeks from tonight. Turns out Brooks is from the Carolinas, and that's how we started talking. And he's really an interesting fellow. And I can see similarities and differences. You know, there is a little bit of overlap between the flat earth and the hollow earth.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
And please go ahead, and then I'll share, you know, a little finding that I've got that I wanted to talk with him and you about. So please go ahead, sir.
Oh, yeah. Well, Brooks Agnew and I are on the same radio network, Truth Frequency Radio. And Hollow Earth, I got into Flat Earth through Hollow Earth. It was a nice segue because, and people that have followed my stuff, they know that Admiral Richard Byrd, who is tied to the Flat Earth stuff a lot now, was tied to Hollow Earth more than anything because he supposedly flew up in 1926 to the North Pole. And it turned into one of those journey to the center of the earth things because there was supposedly an entrance and he supposedly flew inside and saw all this fun stuff. And that's where it gets weird, because you would have thought, okay, he would have kept going to the North Pole, but no, the government sent him down to the Antarctic for, you know, in 1928 and kept him down there. But the Hollow Earth, I have absolutely no conflict with at all, because it's slightly modified, sure. Hollow Earth theory says that it's a globe and that it's kind of hollowed out on the inside, hence Hollow Earth, and that there's all this massive open spaces where civilizations can live. And Flat Earth, well, it's, you can still have hollow places, they're just smaller. And you don't need much, because remember, the average, our civilization, 90-something percent of it lives from just sea level to 1 mile up, you know, 5,000 feet. And airplanes cap out at about 10 miles, spy planes 20 miles. So you wouldn't need much at all. You don't need thousands of miles worth of hollow earth. You could get away with an entire civilization living in just like a 100-mile cavern, 100-mile high cavern if you want. In fact, some speculation that we ourselves could be living inside some sort of hollow earth type environment where, again, we just can't see the ceiling.
Well, that's interesting. I think it'd be good to have Brooks on here, and if he's interested, maybe we can have the two of you on at another time to discuss similarities and differences. I know that that's one that I would jump at, because I see the whole thing. And the whole thing about Admiral Richard Byrd, I've got a paper that I have written, and I'm gonna keep modifying it. I've got probably another month's worth of work on it. But what I really found interesting is in the 1953 television show, it was the Longines Chronograph. And
Chronoscope.
Chronoscope. And they had Admiral Richard Byrd, and he talked about the land beyond the poles. He talked about the land beyond the poles first time about the North Pole, and then the second time about the South Pole. And it was amazing to me. It's like he went on television, said this, and I believe at that point he really, the government was shocked that he would talk about this, and he never did that again.
Nope.
And as the admiral said in his diary, it's been a rough 7 years of my life. And he wrote that the last year that he lived. He said it's been a rough 7 years. Now, come on. He was doing exploration in the Antarctic. There was nothing particularly rough about that. It was it's a rough and tumble place. And why would he say the last 7 years of his life were especially rough if he wasn't under an enormous amount of pressure from the government from what he'd said? I read several places. Now, I don't know this, the fact that he was actually decommissioned as an admiral toward the very end of his life. I don't know about that, but that's one of these things I've heard. Maybe that's a little bit of a conspiracy kind of thing. I don't know. But that Admiral Byrd shocked the world in 1953 on that television show. It's out there on YouTube. You can't get away from it. It's there. And so I believe, I was talking with Brooks the other day, and I said, I believe Admiral Richard Byrd is absolutely the real life Indiana Jones. He was the man. He did things nobody else did or could do, which is fly over each of the poles. And the fact is, you know, I believe the man. I believe him. Yeah. He was uncensored there in 1953 on that television show. And so what more can you say? You pick and choose your battles, you pick and choose your heroes. I'll go on the record and say my two heroes, or actually my three heroes, are Ric Flair, Papa Stro Maestro, and Admiral Richard Byrd. I believe them. I believe what they do, what they've done, and you know, they're my heroes.
Nice,
Devin. Who are your heroes? Do you have a hero, Devin? I'm gonna go around everybody here. So Mark, get ready for me to ask you, Devin. Who's your hero?
Okay.
I think it's Philip Oakey from the Human League.
Okay, and why is that?
No, that I have never heard. That is awesome. That is one of the more unique answers I've ever heard for that question. That's great.
We got Devin on here. Devin's awesome. Devin, why is he your hero?
You know, he's a figure I identified with early on in life when I was a kid, and you know, he just keeps going and going and going, and it kind of inspires me to keep going against all odds, and I have been lucky enough to meet him a couple of times, and he just seems like a really great person. And so as I became an atheist, you know, in my late teenage years, and I was kind of looking for at least somebody to look up to, I guess he just kind of fit the bill.
That's a great answer.
Thank
That's
you.
That's really a great answer. You know, and it's funny. I am what I would call, in most ways, a very intense believer in God. Well, I'm a very intense believer in God. And it's funny. I think if you're really intense about what you like and believe in, you can be friends with people that are the exact opposite of you, because it's nothing but your intellectual view of life. And if you're smart enough, people can get over any petty differences they have and can enjoy the company of folks that are 180 degrees opposite from them. So I think that's a great answer. All right, Mark, who's your hero?
Oh, my hero? Some people will probably laugh at this one. It's Tom Selleck. Here's why. Because his career was really varied, and he seemed to, even more than like David Hasselhoff, he just seemed to fall into the, you know, charmed life type of stuff. You know, he started out as just a model, but played semi-pro volleyball. And then he was offered, simultaneously, he was offered the role of Indiana Jones, which eventually was taken by Harrison Ford, and Magnum P.I. And so you had this choice, and Magnum P.I. had offered him just like a month earlier. And so it's like, okay, do I shoot on location in Hawaii? Who knows how long that show is going to go? Or do I work with Steven Spielberg and George Lucas and do Indiana Jones? And he chose Magnum P.I. and did that. And then afterwards, you know, did all sorts of movies and stuff. But there's this cool story that I some people are going to groan and go, oh, not this story again. No, it's a good story. When I was watching a baseball game, I was just flipping through channels. There was an Atlanta Braves baseball game. And they said, oh, okay, now it's time to see if we can find Tom Selleck. Right? It's like, what? Tom Selleck's at the game? But they weren't showing the stands. They were showing the dugout. See, because he always wore this Detroit Tigers hat on the television show, the Detroit Tigers were so happy that he did this, they offered him basically lifetime access to the games. And he was big. You know, he's like 6'4", 6'5". And so he did a deal with him. What he would do is he would shave off his mustache and put on a jersey, and he would just sit in the dugout with the players every once in a while. And no one knew it was him. The players knew, and they, you know, they were cool with it. It's like, oh, yeah, it's Tom Selleck. So he did that, you know, throughout his career until he got to a certain age where, like, people weren't going to buy it anymore. But, yeah, he's still doing it now. You know, what is he doing, Blue Bloods? He's going to basically be on television forever. So I always liked the guy. I always thought he was a cool dude.
I can tell you, I believe everyone's mother is in love with Tom Selleck. I know mine was.
Yep. Yep. My mom is too. Yep. They all. Look. Every time. In fact, they had to kill the studio audiences when. Remember, because he played the older boyfriend on the television show Friends. And they had to get rid of the television audiences because when he would walk into set, the older women in the crowd would just freaking go berserk and they'd keep screwing up the shots. So they're like, all right, just clear them out. We'll do this without the audience. So, a little trivia.
Wow, that's great. So, Mark, what if you were to give someone some guidance about doing
right.
some research on the flat Earth and who to
right.
listen to and where to go? And first of all, I would say go to your series on YouTube. It was very interesting. And that's how I met you, actually. I kind of happened across that. I saw you were at a conference. Then I found your series. I listened to it one night. I was driving back from, I forget where. I had about a 3-hour drive, and I enjoyed it very much. So, what advice would you give someone that's interested in learning different viewpoints of the structure of the universe?
Okay.
Where do they
if
go?
You've
what
never.
They
okay, the two things. One, if you're not into conspiracies at all, if you absolutely believe the world that is presented to you in all its shapes and forms. then I would, including the Apollo landing, I would watch the documentary first, which is called Behind the Curve. And you can, you know, it's on streaming on Amazon and iTunes and Google Play and stuff like that. That's what I would recommend first. If you know, if you absolutely do not believe in anything, you know, anything alternative. If you do believe in some alternative things, I don't know, be it JFK or 9/11, Boston bombing or whatever, then I would look at the Flat Earth Clues. Yes. All you have to do is go on YouTube or type it into Google, type in Flat Earth Clues. It's free. I mean, if you want to buy the book, you can, or the audio version, you can, but it's on YouTube. And it's in different, it's in a whole bunch of different channels, Flat Earth Clues. And then once you get through that, I would go to, there's so much content out there that's even hard to find. I mean, there's so much stuff. I would type in the Flat Earth Shortlist for New People, which is a collection of different Flat Earth contributors and content makers. And from there, that'll start you down a rabbit hole. And again, my apologies in advance, because you probably won't sleep for a few weeks. And that's not my fault. But at the same time, I should have apologize. Somebody's got to apologize. So, yeah, that's where I would send you first.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. Well, maybe what we could do is we could carve out one night in January where we could get on Scarecast and we could encourage everyone to watch the movie. And then we could encourage folks to call in and talk to you about the movie. Would you up for that?
Oh, yeah, sure. They would have questions. Every audience does. So, yeah. But the Scarecast people, I don't know if they would have to watch the movie because they're already into alternative things. If they're listening to your show, they're already into alternative things. So at that point, all you'd have to do is get them to watch or listen to the clues, and then they'd be fine.
Okay. Well, we'll do something.
Either one.
And we'll head back in the latter part of January. I mean, I find what you do totally engaging. It's engaging enough that I've spoken with you about putting together a Flat Earth conference over here on the East Coast, likely in Charlotte, because there's good airport access to Charlotte and everything, and we're going to see what we can do because I'd love for people to get to meet you and to get to talk to you about this. I think you're a heck of a good entertainer when it comes to explaining this, and we'd love to have you here. When we get Devin over here, we had to get a lot of people over here just for that. But so we're going to work on some things like that and engaging in good, solid, intellectual conversation.
Yep.
And if I can drive that home, when I die, and other than bury me deep, and put two speakers on my feet, when I die, I hope everyone can say, John got people together to talk and think. If they can say that, and if I did do it, I'll be happy. And I like the topic of the Flat Earth. I think it's important. It's an important thing to look at and be aware of. It doesn't matter to me what you believe in, as long as you understand other things. I guess as a parting shot, and you can have a little while on this parting shot here tonight, tell us what you think. Tell us where everything's going. Tell us what you're doing, you know, where you're going to be talking and everything, and anything coming up that any good, solid, free-thinking, smart people would like to know.
All right. The first thing that I'm going to be doing is the Question Everything conference, which is going to be in Los Angeles in February. And
Devin,
the rest of this year – I'm sorry, say it again.
I said Devin needs to go. He'll be there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Devin, if you're out there in L.A., it's going to be pretty fun. I'm going to be speaking at it, and – I'm not exactly sure which presentation I'm going to use because I've done different ones in different places. But it's going to be fun regardless. I'm going to be out there for a few days. And then after that, just kind of helping people with different documentaries that they're working on. As a matter of fact, the National Geographic, they shot us back in at the end of the summer, I think in August, September. And that's coming out on Monday on National Geographic Explorer. They're running our segments, and I know they're going to use me on that. Hopefully they don't paint me as a cult leader, because they're asking me some tough questions at the end of that, like how Flat Earth was going to potentially destroy the world. And I was going, really? And I was so tempted to just jump on that and say that it was that absolutely, and you know, do the whole mad scientist thing, but I didn't. And then the rest of 2019, a whole bunch of different conferences, again, just working on collaborating with different people on different projects, trying to get this thing bigger and weirder, and organizing meetups for people in all parts of the country. If you want to check out Flat Earth People, the people that are in Flat Earth, all you have to do is type in Flat Earth Meetup into YouTube or Google, and it'll pop up a list of different meetups that have happened over the last couple of years, and I guarantee there's probably been one in your area recently. In fact, it's funny you mentioned what John was mentioning. The conference that we did last year was in Raleigh, North Carolina, and that was a whole bunch of fun. Other than that, really just what I mentioned earlier, watch the documentary, watch the clues, do your own research. You can always email me directly. I put my phone number and my address and my email address. I'm very, very easy to find on the internet. So you can track me down if you have direct questions already, which you might have. But truthfully, before you ask the questions, I mean, if you're just listening to this podcast and you have questions, you might want to watch the clues first because it'll fill in some of the gaps. I mean, I've had people call me literally after the first clue. You know, it's a series of 1 through 12. There's 14 now. But people will call me after like the first 15, 20 minutes. So, yeah, I can hear myself in the background. It's like, yeah, you put your phone number in the end. I'm calling you. It's like, no. Just keep going with the clues. Don't call me after clue 1. Call me after clue 12 if you still have questions. So, yeah, other than that, again, do your own research. Don't take anything I say as the gospel. Do your own homework. Do your own legwork and go out there and come up with your own experiments. Think outside the box. The one that most people, I'll leave it with this. The one that most people do is they will go to some sort of body of water and shoot long distance photography with a digital zoom camera. And by that, I mean, because the curvature of the earth, mainstream science says it's 8 inches per mile squared, which is 8 inches per mile per mile, which means eventually something's going to go over the hill and you're not going to be able to pull it back. It's gone. But that's not the case anymore. And that's where I didn't even come up with that idea. People that listened to other things came up with it, and that's kind of the benchmark of the first wave of tests that people do. There you go. That's my rant this evening.
Well, that's a pretty incredible thing about the curvature of the Earth and those experiments. That's one thing that I would like to talk with you more about.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to talk about the Eratosthenes experiment, about how he determined the size of the sphere. And this is kind of a bit of a corollary to it about how we're determining the fact that there is no sphere. So I love scientific experiments. I think they're important. They teach us a lot. And I now have no university to complain about my experiments. So that's a great thing. So we'll talk about it. And I will say this. You answer your telephone because that's how I found out about you. That's how you and I met. We're on this show, and hopefully you, Def and I, and Papa Stro, we're all going to embark on some great things together as we move forward with all these great concepts. Because if we don't move forward with cool, interesting concepts, we'll stagnate and we will be nowhere. From the bottom of my heart, thank you on behalf of ScaryCast. It has been a real honor having you here, and as I listen to this podcast next week, I'm going to take some notes. There are a number of folks that I'd like to introduce you to, and we'd like to have you on our show and with them to talk. I think discourse is important, don't you?
Sure. Sure, absolutely. Art through adversity. How's that go? Absolutely. You can't have, unless you have something pushing against you, what do you know that you've accomplished? Yeah.
That's exactly right. Well, Mark, again, thank you. And I'm going to turn, I'm going to speak to my buddy Devin, who puts up with me sometimes and my guests. But Devin, I want to thank you for being here and having good questions to talk with Mark about. And you bring some really interesting guests too. And that's what I think ScaryCast is about. Sometimes it's a little scary. But sometimes it's about, again, talking to folks with different opinions and ideas and getting them out there so that they can so that they can be heard. Don't you agree?
I totally agree, and I think it's great that you're doing this, and I love to give people an opportunity to express their views when they might not be popular or, you know, universally accepted. I think it's really important to hear those views.
Well, it really is, and we're grateful to have you. We're grateful to have Papa Stroh. We're grateful to have great guests like Mark. So I guess what we'll say is thank you, everyone. I hope you've enjoyed listening to ScaryCast tonight with our special guest, Mark Sargent, Flat Earth proponent and scientific explorer, just in the same vein as Admiral Richard E. Byrd and a number of other people that want to look at the real world and try to figure out what it is, because that's an exciting thing to do. So I guess we'll sign off tonight, and next week, Jenna Grover of the She Squatchers, who is a marvelous, marvelous psychic, will be here. And then the next week we'll have Brooks Agnew. And we'll also have Mark sooner than later, because he's really interesting. So I want to say, on behalf of Devin, Papa Stroh, myself, thanks for listening to ScaryCast. We'll see you next time. We'll talk to you next time. So take care. And Mark, have a great New Year's, okay?
All right. Thanks very much for having me, guys.
All right, take care.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.